They're still marching in Ferguson, and we talk about revolution and counter-revolution with Gerald Horn today, coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for October 16, 2014. Again, a big shout-out to my brothers Eitan Thomas and Dave Zirin on The Collision for their big show. Since May 1st, on May Day, when we launched this show on the ground, we've been bringing you and lifting up voices of activists and activism here in the nation's capital, from Gaza to Ferguson to the voices of the unemployed and underemployed, those working for labor rights and fair wages, working to get money out of politics and to let Congress and the Supreme Court know that corporations are not people, to fracking, to Cove Point, to climate change, to our coverage of the People's Climate March. We have brought new interviews, voices, and sounds from the streets onto the airwaves here at 89.3 WPFW, your listener-sponsored radio in the nation's capital. Today, for our second week of the Fall Fundraiser, an in-depth conversation with author, historian, activist, our favorite geopolitical analyst, Gerald Horn. And just for this hour, we are offering his two critically praised books, Counter-Revolution of 1776, Slave Resistance and the Origins of the United States of America, and Race to Revolution, the U.S. and Cuba During Slavery and Jim Crow. I think that we are offering these at an unbelievable deal, something like $75 for Counter-Revolution, $50 basic membership for Race to Revolution, and you can get both for $120. Just for this hour, folks, to support On the Ground, the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. My goal is just $500, but I expect to far surpass that, so you can get me started by calling 202-588-9739 or pledging right on the website at wpfw.org. The theme for the fundraiser is The Struggle Continues, and like we said last week, we know what that means on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, so we think it is fitting to look at the struggle in history and how it directly applies to what is happening today, from Detroit to Ferguson to a Walmart in Ohio to home care workers right here in D.C. demanding that agencies obey the law and pay a living wage, provide sick days like the law says. But we'll get to all that. First, we'll get to our headlines. In Nigeria, demonstrators are marking 6 months since the kidnapping of more than 200 schoolgirls by the Boko Haram. On Tuesday, dozens of people with the Bring Back Our Girls campaign rallied in the capital, Abuja. In Ferguson, Missouri, protesters have wrapped up 4 days of action with a moral Monday of civil disobedience. Scores of people were arrested in acts of nonviolent resistance across St. Louis. On the final day of Ferguson, October, the protest drew people from across the country to protest the fatal police shooting of 18-year-old African-American Michael Brown and the lack of justice for police shooting victims nationwide. Outside Ferguson Police Headquarters, hundreds of protesters remained for hours, the same amount of time police allowed Brown's body to lie in the street. Monday's protests capped off a weekend of actions, including a night march to the Ferguson Police Department on Saturday night. We have some sound from that Saturday night rally.
Fight back! Fight back!
Yeah. think it's a joke.
They think it's a game.
They think it's a joke.
They think it's a game.
They think it's a joke.
They think it's a game.
They think it's a joke.
They think it's a game.
They think it's a joke.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If we don't get it,
shut it down.
If turn up, don't turn down. We do this for Mike Brown. Turn up, don't turn down. We do this for Mike Brown.
Turn up, don't turn down. We do this for Mike Brown. Turn up, don't turn down. We do this for Mike Brown.
It's day. Stop it. Send that killer cop to jail. The whole damn system is guilty as hell.
Send that killer cop to jail. The whole damn system is guilty as hell.
Indict,
convict, send that killer cop to jail. The whole damn system is guilty as hell.
Indict,
convict, send that killer cop to jail. The whole damn system is guilty as hell.
Fight for me.
We got to fight back.
Fight for me.
We got to fight back.
We got to fight back.
On Boston Beach,
we got to fight back.
On North Sylvania,
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 we got to fight back.
Fight back.
Fight back.
Fight back.
Those are sounds from a march to the Ferguson Police Department on Saturday night. On Monday, more than 40 people were arrested, including members of the clergy and civil rights activist Cornel West. Protesters also descended on St. Louis City Hall and a political fundraiser attended by Missouri Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill. As you just heard on The Collision, at a St. Louis Rams football game, protesters unveiled banners reading, "Rams fans know Black Lives Matter and racism lives here." And demonstrators also shut down three area Walmarts in solidarity over the fatal police shooting of African-American John Crawford, who was killed while holding a BB air rifle on sale at a Walmart in Ohio. The Pentagon has issued a report on the immediate risks to national security posed by climate change. The report says global warming could increase risks from terrorism and infectious diseases, lead to devastating natural disasters, strain water supplies, and fuel droughts and crop failures, leading to mass migration. The Pentagon report coincides with a new analysis that finds the rise in sea levels recorded over the past century is unparalleled in the last 6,000 years. Wells Fargo has agreed to pay $5 million to settle claims it discriminated against women who were pregnant or had recently given birth. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development said the company denied home loans to recent mothers or forced them to sacrifice their maternity leave and return to work before it would close on their loans. The settlement is a tiny fraction of Wells Fargo's net income, which was $5.7 billion in the last quarter alone. Workers who clean airplane cabins at New York City's LaGuardia Airport have agreed to return to work following a strike over unsafe working conditions. The workers, who are employed by a Delta Airlines contractor, said they have been provided with inadequate protections against feces, vomit, and other bodily fluids, a concern that has strengthened amidst fears of Ebola. Here in D.C. yesterday, rain and thunder moved a rally by home care workers from Freedom Plaza to the Hamilton Crown Plaza Hotel, where workers demanded that D.C. home care employers obey the law and pay unpaid wages, as well as pay sick time and the city's living wage of $13.60 an hour. The home care workers were joined by city candidates Muriel Bowser, Walter Smitty Smith, Alyssa Silverman, and the Reverend Graylin Hagler. to thunderous cheers and applause. Hagler told the gathering that as a social justice activist, he does not mind being considered a political outsider.
You know, so I'm content with being an outsider. You know, everybody that I've come from have been outsiders. Justice in a system that is immoral is an outside issue, right? Standing up for people, average, everyday working people, when everything is built around developers and everything is built around the greedy, well, that's an outside issue. I'm proud to be an outside candidate, to stand up and speak justice. Don't hold my finger in the air and ask which way the wind is blowing. Don't ask which way the polls are saying. To stand because it's the right thing to do. To stand because I can't do anything else. To stand, as long as we stand together, we will bring forth the justice that we need.
That was Graylin Hagler speaking before D.C. home care workers at a rally last night. Early voting in the district starts on October 20th. The election is November 4th. And those are our headlines. When we come back, talking revolution and counter-revolution with Gerald Horn. 202-588-9739 is the number to call to support Thursday's Community Watch and Comment. And that's the On the Ground edition. We'll be right back.
Things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
There's a midget standing tall,
and the giant beside him about to fall.
That was Stand By Sly and the Family Stone on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. Here on 89.3 WPFW, I'm Esther Averam. Well, you know, I think the most important thing that a station like WPFW brings to you is a context for understanding what is happening in our world. When we have that history, current events don't occur in a vacuum or in an ahistorical manner presented by folks like, you know, those folks over at Fox News or something, you know. So today, one of the smartest people you could ever talk to, frequent contributor across the Pacifica Network, the prolific author and activist Gerald Horn is here with us. He's professor at the University of Houston, and like I said, a frequent contributor here, and we so appreciate that. His most recent books are Counter-Revolution of 1776, Slave Resistance and the Origins of the United States of America, and Race to Revolution, the U.S. and Cuba During Slavery and Jim Crow. And like I said, they are available today, and, you know, for a contribution to WPFW and Pacifica to keep our network alive. Good morning, Gerald.
Yeah.
Oh, I couldn't hear you at first. Okay. So, you know, you write in the Counter-Revolution of 1776 that despite the alleged revolutionary and progressive impulse of 1776, the victors went on from there to crush indigenous polities, then moved overseas to do something similar in Hawaii, Cuba, and the Philippines. Then unleashed its counter-revolutionary force in the 20th century in places like Guatemala, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Indonesia, Angola, South Africa, Iran, Grenada. You know, almost painful to read this list. Nicaragua and other territorial sites, you know, too numerous to mention. So what do you think accounts for our historical blindness, this embrace of that America has revolutionary roots and character?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me. And second of all, I'm all in with regard to this fundraising. And so I want to make my own contribution. That is to say, for those who call in to contribute to Pacifica and WPFW, I'm willing to send you the book with an inscription, a personalized inscription that you suggest. I'll subsidize all the postage from Washington to where I reside and from where I reside to listeners. And this, of course, could be a wonderful gift for Christmas coming up, for the holiday season, for birthdays and all the rest. Now, with regard to your question, I think that there is a disconnect between the contemporary reality of the United States and its alleged glorious history. That is to say that even if you listen to our friends on the left, you would think that the United States had this glorious revolutionary history, which sits rather oddly and uneasily with what we know, which is dispossession of the indigenous population, mass enslavement of Africans, the United States ousting Britain from control of the African slave trade as early as the 1790s, and then moving on to ship more Africans to Brazil than even the Portuguese did during their heyday, ditto for Cuba with regard to shipping more Africans to Cuba than the Spanish did during their heyday. And so that drove me to try to develop a new story, a new narrative that would shed light on the contemporary conservatism of the United States, which is still hegemonic, as these ongoing wars tend to suggest, and also cast doubt upon the mythology of the so-called glorious revolutionary era.
Right. So part of maybe not that era in 1776, but further in the next century, there was something that, you know, I guess we all learned about the doctrine of kind of manifest destiny and how, you know, people believe, some American leaders believe that, you know, it was our right to basically, you know, take over places like Cuba, to take over our hemisphere and control it. And I want to hear you talk about how that compares to talk today about American exceptionalism.
Well, obviously there are parallels, but before I respond, let me say that I would hope that listeners are dialing 202-588-9739 and making a pledge to Pacifica, because you don't miss your water till the well runs dry. And certainly Pacifica needs all the help that it can get, specifically WPFW. Now, with regard to your question, there are obvious parallels between this mythological notion of manifest destiny, that is to say, the United States was somehow preordained to move from the Atlantic coast of the 13 colonies of 1776 all the way to California, then on to Alaska and Hawaii in the 20th century, ousting indigenous people along the way, ousting Mexico from a good deal of North America along the way. There's a parallel between that historical process and what we see in the 21st century, these ongoing wars that are unfolding as we speak, particularly on the Syria-Iraqi border, the scores of U.S. military bases in places like Guantanamo and Germany and Japan and scores of other places. Unfortunately and sadly, I don't think that many of our friends, not least on the left, had made those connections, have connected the dots between the kind of settler colonialism that was used to create the United States of America and the all-out imperialism which characterized the United States of America in 2014.
The book has some really interesting analysis around how immigrants have been treated in this country. And, you know, I wondered, you know, how much of the way that America treats the rest of the world now, you know, meaning mainly people of color, when we look at these wars of adventure we're involved in, you know, has its roots in how it treats its own people here. I think you mentioned in the book that very early on, there was a a very distinct difference between how European immigrants were invited and welcomed as opposed to people from Africa who were actually already here.
That's a fair question and a fair point. And once again, I'd like to urge listeners to pick up the phone and dial 202-588-9739 in order to pledge to WPFW.
You know, before we go to your response, actually, this is a good time for us to take a little break. I have Tiffany Jordan, our development director, here in the studio, and she's here to help us to pledge during the fund drive today. Good morning, Tiffany.
Good morning, Esther. Good morning, Gerald Horn. What a pleasure to be here with you both. And we do have some thank you gifts that we want to offer, but of course the best thank you gift of all is the programming. We want to encourage you to call 202-588-9739 or toll free 1-800-222-9739. We have a goal today of $500 that we want to meet and exceed. It's very important that every show reaches the goal that we set because we want to ensure that programming like this, that guests like Gerald Horn can continue to have a voice on our airwaves.
Right, very important right here in the nation's capital. And that is, you know, it's so important. We forget that, you know, when we are on the air, people in power in this country, they can hear an alternative voice that they don't hear anywhere else.
True. Very, very true. And we have a wonderful way of saying thank you to you today for your pledge. If you are able to contribute at the $120 level, you can get the Counter Revolution of 1976.
1776.
I'm sorry. 1776.
Get those glasses, Tiffany.
I know. I do need glasses. And Race to Revolution. Both books are available to you for a pledge of $120. It all starts with your call to 202-588-9739 or toll free 1-800-222-9739.
You know, the station is very unique in the sense that we don't have a whole lot of underwriting. We don't have an association with the university. And Lou Hill started Pacifica decades ago to be a place that was listener supported. And, you know, his model for listener support is what basically laid the foundation for, you know, PBS and NPR. So, you know, we are the original listener-supported network, and we're standing tall on standing strong, and you can help us remain here. It's not guaranteed, you know. Sure. The network has some difficulties, you know, because this model is very challenging in an era when things are a lot more expensive than when the network was founded in the 1940s. It takes a lot more money to keep 50,000 watts on the air. And thanks to your contributions, we are at 50,000 watts. And you know yourself that hasn't been the case in recent years.
That's true. So. And we're also reaching more people as evidenced by the number of new members that have come on board. We're really tracking very well with that. I would say almost 50%.
New members,
which
awesome.
Indicates, hey, we are getting out there. The 50,000 watts are working. But we need evidence of that on this program today. We want you to show and prove your support to this program. I have watched Esther's evolution on the station when she started out just as a segment on a show doing movie reviews.
Yes.
And I'm glad to see that you have made your way to a spot where you're able to really, you know, sink your teeth in, you know, show your revolutionary roots and really shine. So we want to hear from you. We want to know that you support Esther. Give us a call at 202-588-9739, toll free 1-800-222-9739. Support this program and this station.
And you can pledge right online at WPFWFM.org. Speaking of new members, Tiffany, I want to thank a new member, Mr. Gabriel Robinson.
Oh, wonderful.
Of Northeast DC. And he's made a very generous pledge that
Excellent.
Will help us cut into our goal for the show.
Wonderful.
So thank you, Gabriel. He's an architect. He's someone doing a lot of work in the community, and he wanted to support the station. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Gabriel Robinson.
Thank
new
you.
Member.
Excellent.
So that's Northeast DC. We want to hear from Northwest. We want to hear from Southeast. We want to hear from
Tacoma Park,
exactly,
Silver Spring,
exactly. Southwest. We want
Fairfax,
to hear from everybody,
everywhere,
and Silver Spring. Did we say Silver Spring, Rockville? Mm-hmm. You know, we want to hear from everybody at 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. So let's get back to our interview. I think, Gerald, we were going to talk about the how immigrants were treated and how the foundations of this country kind of really shaped the differences between how people of color are treated and European immigrants.
Well, that's a very good question. And once again, let me reiterate that for those who call 202-588-9739, I'm more than willing to do a personal inscription at your behest to both books and mail them on to you for the holidays, for birthdays, for anniversaries, and all the rest. Now, your question raises a very timely contemporary issue and a historical issue. The timely issue is one of the reasons, in my humble opinion, that Ebola has created so much hysteria in North America is in part because it represents a confluence of two major trends in this system. One is the anti-African trend, that is to say, the gentleman from Liberia, Thomas Duncan, who contracted the virus and then flew to Dallas. That helps to generate hysteria. But then that merges with the immigrant bashing, since he is coming from outside of the United States. And those two trends, it seems to me, have been a locomotive driving U.S. history. And this brings me to the historical question, Esther. You know that I basically start this book in 1688 with the expansion of the African slave trade and the consequences of it. But the more I think about it, I think we need to go back a few more decades. I don't think that we of the left or even in the scholarly community have pondered sufficiently the fact that a disproportionate percentage of U.S. presidents have been Irish Protestants, including the current occupant of the White House, who is Irish Protestant on his mother's side, including Ronald Wilson Reagan, Andrew Jackson, and all the rest. And that's important because I think that when we begin to try to gain a clear understanding not only of the dispossession of the indigenous in a brutal fashion, but the African slave trade, we'll have to turn to Northern Ireland and that first colonialism, if you like, that is to say, when London dispatches the people we now call Irish Protestants into Ireland to subdue the Irish and leading to thousands upon thousands of massacres and deaths and all the rest. And then, of course, many of those same people are then dispatched to North America, where they're involved in thousands of thousands of thousands of massacres of the indigenous population, the enslavement of the Africans, and all the rest. I think that that's the kind of interrogation and investigation that we need if we're going to get a clear understanding of the history and the reality of these United States of America.
You know, you started to mention 1688 in your comments, and you also talk about that in the book. So can you talk a little bit about more about the significance of that year? Why is 1688 so important?
Well, people in the United States of America should be very much aware of 1688, just like they're aware of 1776, because it's in 1688 that you have the so-called Glorious Revolution in England. But more to the point, this leads to a decline in the powers of the king and a rise in the powers of the merchant class. More to the point, it leads to a deregulation of the African slave trade, theretofore under the thumb of the king. It leads to what I call free trade in Africans, when scores of merchants descend upon the continent of Africa, manacling and handcuffing every African in sight, driving them across the Atlantic, particularly to the Caribbean, and this creates enormous wealth for these merchants. Sometimes the voyages of the slave trade lead to profits of 1,700% or more, and as you know, there are those today who will sell their firstborn child for a 1,700% profit. This creates the fuel for the takeoff of the system we now know as capitalism, but it also leads to tremendous slave revolts as the number of Africans grows in the Caribbean and then on the North American mainland, and this unleashes a chain of events that culminates in the independence of the United States, the proclamation of the independence of the United States on July 4th, 1776, creating this nation in which we now reside.
You know, we don't really kind of look at the history that way. Usually, this part of the history really isn't brought out, and that's what is brought out in this book that we're talking about today and offering to you, The Counter-Revolution of 1776. And one of the main points of the book is the fact that the settlers began to view England almost as siding with slaves, siding with Africans, and that really fueled their resistance to England, really fueled their what became a rebellion.
Well, that is true. Britain was under a lot of pressure, competitive pressure from Spain, which had begun to arm Africans as early as the 1500s. There was a contestation for hegemony in the hemisphere between London and Madrid, and Madrid was stealing a march on London by arming Africans. London was coming to believe that unless it began to arm Africans similarly, then it would lose this contest for hegemony in the hemisphere. And so when it began to move in that direction, this outraged the settlers in the North American colonies. They did not believe in arming Africans. They believed in manacling and handcuffing every African in sight and marching them in gunpoint into the cotton fields and the tobacco fields to create wealth for plantation owners and planters. And my contention in this book is that that fundamental contradiction leads to a fissure and a rift that culminates in a proclamation of independence on July 4, 1776. But more to the point, I think that in terms of trying to understand, for example, these upcoming midterm elections, where as of now, it seems that the Republicans, the barbarian Republicans, will not only keep control of the House, but may take control of the Senate. How is it, listeners might ask, that so many working class people, particularly those who are defined as white, vote for the Republicans who then get into office and sabotage the interests of the working class? Well, I don't think you can begin to understand that fundamental question and problem of contemporary politics unless you understand the history of this country, unless you understand that many of these people I'm referring to in the working class, they see themselves, rightly or wrongly, I would say wrongly, in an alliance with the ruling class to protect these working class people's interests, particularly against the interests of people of color. Now, that's a very uncomfortable truth to digest, but I'm still waiting for another explanation as to why it is that the Republicans are sweeping through the ballot box like wildfire.
Wow. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment on the Ground. I'm Esther Averam, your Thursday host, and I'm joined in the studio today by Tiffany Jordan, for our development director for the Fund Drive, and I'm joined on the line by Gerald Horn, author of Counter-Revolution of 1776. And we're talking about the book. We're going to be talking about his other book, Race to Revolution. And we're offering these wonderful books to you today during the Fund Drive at a tremendous bargain.
Oh, yes. I mean, we are offering these books as thank you gifts for supporting the programming that you're hearing, the guest that you are enjoying. I'm really engrossed in the conversation and learning more about the books, and it's wonderful to have, if you're able to, in your collection. So we're encouraging you to call 202-588-9739. We have a limited number of copies of the book available, so you want to take advantage now during this hour, during this program, to call 202-588-9739 or toll free 1-800-222-9739. We have the book Race to Revolution available for a $50 pledge. We also have the book The Counter-Revolution of 1776, available for a $75 tax-deductible donation. Or if you'd like to get a copy of both books, that is a $120 pledge made to the station, ensures that programming like this stays on the air alive and well. And we do have someone to thank, Esther.
Yes, we want to also thank Rick Sullivan from Kensington, Maryland. Kensington is in the house. He's going to pick up Gerald Horn's Counter Revolution. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Rick, for calling. And we want you to join Rick by calling 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. I have a lot of folks out there who promised me they were going to call. And so I want you to keep your promise and support. And even if you didn't tell me you were going to call, I need you to call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or go on to the website WPFWFM.org and pledge. You know, we want to hear. So that's Kensington. We want to hear from Rockville. We want to hear from Bethesda, Silver Spring, Northwest DC. We want to hear from Lanham and Suitland and District Heights and Bowie. Yep. All the folks who call the show from Bowie, come on. You know, all the folks who call from Virginia, we want to hear from you today. This is our second day of the drive, and we really went out of our way to get some special gifts for you for the show. And so we want you to show that you are not only just listening and calling in during other parts of the year, but listening and calling in and supporting during the fun drive. 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or WPFWFM.org.
All right, and perhaps you're in a position where you can make a contribution for someone that can't. There are a lot of people that enjoy the ability to call in on a program like this, Community Watch and Comment on the Ground, okay? You have access to this station, and that's not something that other stations can really say. You have the ability to call in, engage with the host, with the guest, and that's available to you every single day during the week. And not just on programs like this, but there are other programs where you can call in as well. But in order to keep that dialogue going, to keep those lines of communication open, and to make certain that others that cannot afford to make a pledge have access, we are asking you now to step up to the plate and call 202-588-9739
or 1-800-222-9739 or pledge right on the web. I want to hear I want to know that the phones are ringing, but we're going to go to a little break right now.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we'll talk some more with Gerald Horn. But in the meantime, go to the phones, pledge online. We're waiting to hear from you.
I don't want to take no time to write this down. For you or me, life is our promise. Tomorrow may never show up. For you or me, life is not promised. Yeah, I ain't no perfect man. I'm trying to do the best that I can with what it is I have. And I ain't no perfect man. I'm trying to do the best that I can with this mic in my hand. Even though it's feedback, still won't come at you. Put my heart and soul into it, y'all. Let's start. Do you feel me? Go! Where I am to wherever you are. I mean it, I mean it, I mean it. Tomorrow may never come. Gone. For you or me, life is not promised. Hey! Tomorrow may never appear. You better every moment, so very close to you. 8 o'clock in the p.m. September 18, 2004. Happy birthday, so close to you. I look around right in these blocks, I see people who look so weak. Police kill innocent people in the street, young babies ain't got food to eat. Sometimes I make it feel like God. Sometimes my heart get heavy. Sometimes I just wanna leave. From Brooklyn I could never leave. Sometimes I don't know what to do with myself. Passion.
And that was Umi Says by Mos Def here on Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. If you're just tuning in, we are talking to the awesome Gerald Horn, author and activist, and author of books that we have to offer you today, Counter Revolution of 1776 and Race to Revolution. And we have another person to thank. You know, we're running out of these combos.
Yes, we are.
We're going to be running out of them soon. So you better call in 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 and make your pledge or go online and pledge. We want to thank Toure. Is that right? Do I have the spelling, the pronunciation right? Toure. And if I am mispronouncing, I'm sorry. I'm doing my best here. And she's calling, or they're calling from Washington, D.C., and they're going to pick up the pack of Gerald Horn books, Counter Revolution and Race to Revolution. Thank you so much, Toure. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you for calling. And I want you to join Toure and make a call and pledge for Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. We are very close to making our goal.
Oh my goodness, so close.
We are so close to making a goal, and we have about maybe 12 minutes or 15 minutes to go to make our goal. So help me, help push me over the top today. We came so close last week.
I added that in. So we are looking at what? We need about another $120 will do it.
Okay, yeah. So if one person just calls and gets the pack.
There you go.
Absolutely. Okay, so Gerald, one of the things that I thought was really fascinating in A Race to Revolution is you wrote this. The potent concept that racism is necessary but insufficient in explaining the past and present plight of those who are now designated as African American. More to the point, this beleaguered grouping has endured the misfortune of fighting and losing a struggle that led to the formation of a slave-holding republic. So, you know, as we live today and we're dealing with, you know, Ferguson, we're dealing with so many different issues, you know, what is the practical difference that you see between racism, right, and then losing a struggle that led to the formation of a slave-holding republic? I mean, isn't that the same thing? Isn't the slave-holding republic racist? I wanted you to talk about that a little bit more if you can.
In the Counter-Revolution of 1776 book on the history of Virginia and Maryland in particular. More to the point, there's a lot on religion, because one of my contentions is that the formation of the United States basically marks a break with the religious Cold War between Protestant Britain and the so-called Catholic powers, that is to say, Spain and France in particular. And what the founders of the United States do is break with religion as an axis for differentiation, which is of course embodied in the First Amendment proclamation of freedom of faith, and then move to race as the axis of differentiation. And so people of faith in particular need to understand that concept, particularly people of color. Now, with regard to your question, it seems to me that those concepts are intertwined, but they're different. I use the term racism all the time, not least in this conversation. But what I'm arguing in this book is that what befalls people of African descent in North America is not only racism. What befalls them is the fact that they oppose the formation of a slave-holding republic, and then they fight vigorously against a successor Jim Crow regime. And when you fight and lose titanic conflicts, you tend to get pulverized and punished, not only you, but your descendants forevermore. And part of my argument in this book is that is what has befallen the population known as African American. That is to say, we had the misfortune of fighting two losing wars and then being punished for those defeats.
Right. I also wondered if you're kind of separating out, when you talk about a slaveholding republic and the tremendous economic boost that slavery gave this country, the, you know, economic foundation of the country, were you separating out concepts of race from economics?
Well, certainly my contention is that we were brought here in the first place because of the lust for profit. And this whole idea of somehow rescuing us from benighted Africa becomes an ex post facto rationalization for exploitation of our labor. And that's why I think it's very useful to draw these kinds of distinctions that I'm seeking to draw, because I think if you don't draw these distinctions, it won't be very useful in terms of plotting a path forward in terms of how we get out of this mess we find ourselves in 2014.
Okay. And the I wanted to kind of go back to 1688 again. And I wanted you to talk a little bit more about the fact that of why you call your book Counter-Revolution, and you know what, you know, just for, you know, the sake of not only this conversation but just our basic understanding, you know, about revolution versus counter-revolution. Like, why do you call it that?
Well, there are a number of hinge dates in that text. One is 1776, of course, marking the birthday of the United States of America. Another, 1688, which I've already made reference to, which is the year of the so-called Glorious Revolution, leading to a decline in the powers of the king, a rise in the power of the merchant class. The merchant class, of course, entering the African slave trade, establishing a strong foothold in North America, which helps to account for the fact why you have so many millions upon millions of people of African descent in North America to this very day. But another important year is 1772. That's the year of Somerset's case in London, where it is established that England is going to try to move away from slavery. The perception grows on this side of the Atlantic that if England moves away from slavery and London moves away from slavery, why won't that kind of decision migrate across the Atlantic, and would that not jeopardize fortunes built upon slave trade and slavery? Fortunes, for example, embodied in personalities like George Washington, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, slaveholders all, fortunes like that of John Adams of Massachusetts, the second president of the United States, who was an attorney for slaveholders, fortunes like that of John Hancock, whose John Hancock appears in the founding document of this United States of America, one of the largest slaveholders of Massachusetts. And so my contention is that when the revolt against British rule is launched in the 1770s, this is a counter-revolution because they're revolting against the prospect of abolishing slavery. Likewise, I draw an analogy between what happened in the country once known as Southern Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe, in November 1965, when London is moving towards decolonization and African-majority rule, and rather than accept that decision, the settlers and colonists, following in the footsteps of 1776, revolt against British rule and try to set up an independent white republic, just like an independent white republic, so-called, was established in North America in 1776. I don't think that anybody would call 1965 in Southern Rhodesia a revolution. I think a fair estimate would be that it was a counter-revolution. And likewise, I'm trying to drive readers to see that in order to understand the resultant conservatism of these United States of America, you have to understand that 1776 was not some sort of glorious revolution. It was a counter-revolution.
Okay. You're listening to Gerald Horn, author of The Counter-Revolution of 1776, and also Race to Revolution. And he's talking to us on the second day of our for the fall fundraiser. And we want you to go to the phones and call 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739. Go to the phones, or you can also pledge right online at WPFWFM.org. Did you want to say something, Tiffany, before we go to the break?
I do, really quickly. I want to say we just need $51 in order for you to reach the goal. So that's one more book plus a dollar.
Right, that's right. And do we want to thank someone?
Yes, I can't see it.
Okay.
As you pointed out.
Those we want to thank Lisa from Columbia, Maryland. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And she's made a very generous pledge. And I think she may be picking up Race to Revolution. She certainly can.
Yes, she
and,
can.
And thank you again, Lisa. So that's Columbia, Maryland is in the house. Columbia, Maryland is in the house. So we have to hear from Tacoma Park. Mm-hmm. We have to hear from Hyattsville. We have to hear from what?
Oh, Virginia, Alexandria, Falls Church, Roslyn, any place in Virginia. D.C., Maryland, all the way to Baltimore, Pennsylvania, wherever you can hear us.
Baltimore, exactly. Baltimore, that's who I haven't heard from today. Okay, so we're going to go to a brief break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Gerald Horn some more. But we only have about 2 minutes left. So call in.
Breaking rocks out here on the chain gang, breaking rocks and serving my time. Breaking rocks out here on the chain gang, 'cause they done convicted me of crime. Hold it steady right there while I hit it. Well, I reckon that ought to get it. Been working and working, but I still got so terribly far to go. I committed crime, Lord, I need it. Crime of being hungry and poor. I left the grocery store, man, breathing, when they caught me robbing a store. Hold it steady right there while I hit it. Well, I reckon that ought to get it. Been working and working, but I still got so terribly far to go. I heard the judge say 5 years on the chain gang you gonna go. I heard the judge say 5 years of labor. I heard my old man scream, Lordy, no. Hold it right there while I hit it. Well, I reckon that ought to get it. Been working.
And that was The Work Song by Nina Simone. And this is Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. This is Esther Averam. And I'm so pleased to have been able to speak to Gerald Horn today, author of Counter-Revolution of 1776 and also Race to Revolution. We didn't have a chance to talk a lot about Race to Revolution, but in the 1 minute we have left, Gerald, I wanted you to know if just sort of your thoughts as a native son of St. Louis, if you had any thoughts kind of relating this history that we've been talking about to what we're experiencing in Ferguson today.
Well, certainly. I think Ferguson illustrates some of the themes that I've been trying to address this morning. That is to say, the shooting of Michael Brown in August 2014 has raised troubling questions, not least of which is the fact that polls tend to suggest that a majority or a significant percentage of Euro-Americans don't see what the big deal is. This raises the point that if the protesters in Ferguson want to be successful, they're going to have to bring that question to an international audience. That has been the theme of our history for centuries. That is to say, getting support abroad. Actually, that's the theme, quite frankly, of our music. If you look at our prominent musicians, many of whom, of course, had to establish a foothold in Europe before receiving acclamation here in the United States of America. And if you look very closely at Ferguson in August 2014, one of the things that will leap out at you is that it was the international coverage of Ferguson from RT in Moscow, from China Daily, from Press TV in Iran, that forced the hand of the U.S. media and then forced President Barack Obama at the U.N. General Assembly in September 2014 to speak from the rostrum of the United Nations about this domestic question. I think that that helps to underscore and illustrate some of the points I've been trying to drive home to readers in my books.
Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking to Gerald Horn, author and activist, frequent commentator across the Pacifica Network. Thank you so much, Gerald, for joining me on the fundraiser today and for your generous offer to sign books by listeners. And we have a lot of people picking up the package. I want to thank Alvin Jack from Lanham, Maryland, who's picking up Gerald Horn's Counter-Revolution of 1776. And with that goal, with that package, you know, I have gone over my goal, so I thank everyone who's called, and I want to thank those who are on the phones right now picking up the few packages we have left. They're precious. Gerald Horn's going to sign them, and we're going to get them to you. They're here in the building. There's no wait. There's no worry. No worries at all. So for the last time, 202-588-9739 or 1-800-222-9739 or pledge right on the web at wpfwfm.org. That will do it for us on the Thursday edition of Community Watch and Comment. Again, I'm Esther Avram. Thanks again to Gerald Horn, and thank you so much for listening and calling in and for pledging, which you can still do. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. And remember, today marks more than 2 months since Darren Wilson shot dead Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and still no arrest. Now stay tuned for Askin Muhammad with the news, followed by Chris DeProperty on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice. Peace.